Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's April the 18th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock. She's from Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news. And then closer to the bottom of the hour, we'll have Gary Schnittke on to talk just a little bit about how he views the distribution of corn and soybean acres in the Midwest. Mr. Schnittke, Professor Schnittke, Associate Professor Schnittke says maybe a half a bushel off of the national yield by the time we get to this fall. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us for a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, willag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to willag.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Taking a look now on this Wednesday afternoon at how things settled at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. Futures in the wheat pit were down 3 cents at Chicago, 474.5 the settlement price. July futures at $4.89, they were off a penny and 3/4. And September contract down 3 cents for the day. Corn May futures 10.25 higher, 363.5 the settlement price. July at 375.25, up a dime. And December futures were up just 2 cents at 381.5. May soybeans were off 8.5 cents at 715.5. July at 732.25 were down 9. And November soybeans were off 11 cents today at 759.5. May bean meal futures at 196.90, they were down 90. May bean oil down 80 cents at 31.07 on the afternoon. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, 107.27.5. They were down 57.5 for the day. For the April feeder cattle, April live cattle at 97.12.5, down 52.5 cents. And June futures were off 45 cents at $92.82.5. 100-weight lean hogs May contract at $75.80, off 60 cents. The outside markets trading the May crude oil futures at this hour at 63.14. They're up 4, and June futures are currently down 6 cents at $64.40 a barrel. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 12,815, and that's just about 42 cents higher, rather 42 points higher, for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on a Wednesday is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Okay, so why do we have the beans sharply lower and the corn, at least in the nearbys, up just nearly as much?
Well, it's good news on the Wall Street with the Dow in record territory. As far as the corn market, the one interesting story was the Argentine export elevators are full of soybeans, and there is corn demand, and the only place to really buy corn of any quality or quantity is the USA. And a cheap U.S. dollar, and the spreaders have been bearish old crop corn and bullish new crop. And when the SIF basis improved, a cheap dollar, Japan coming in and buying U.S. origin corn, it was a real snap of the finger, and the corn market was up. Wheat, up until the last 4 or 5 minutes, was better, and up until the last few minutes it did close a little lower. But also there is this whisper that the insurance and also the agronomists say there is rough times out in the wheat fields in the Midwest, and as a result of that, you know, we do think there'll be some acreage shrinkage. As far as the beans are concerned, flat price beans in the world are cheaper than U.S., not many beans for sale, and as a result of that, the beans are going towards where they're competitive again in the world market. So it was rough again in the bean market, somewhat supportive in corn, and I would say a little disappointing in the wheat with as much positive news about the damage and the world growing condition problems.
Yeah, do you think fundamentally that this divergence between the wheat and the corn and the soybeans is something that probably needs to happen given the supply of beans that are around on the global stocks?
You know, I'm ultimately of a believer here that beans are, you know, at this 10, 50, you know, $7 beans are cheaper than that at the elevator. It's not going to buy very many beans, short term or long term. And my general impression is that we really won't know the real ratio between the corn and beans for another 2.5 weeks. It seems like the people that you have a lot of confidence in don't feel like we're going to see the 90 million acres. In other words, it's 2 million acres less or 1.5 million or something like that. The government probably reached a little far. And it will be interesting to see how the weather unfolds here in the next two and a half weeks, and also this wheat problem in the state of Illinois, whether it'll go to wheat or beans, corn or beans. But the general feeling is, Todd, that beans have a very large supply, but at some point in time, with the real at record levels, high levels here, near-term highs, there's really not a big incentive to plant a lot more acres of beans next year in South America. So, you know, it's maybe a little gloomy near-term, but somewhere along the line, we do have to grow acres next year in the bean complex. And it is a futures market, and it has had a lot of people, both the bull and the bear, guessing here for the last year and a half to 2 years about what the real value of soybeans are.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about wheat in Illinois and the soft red crop, mostly south of Effingham, the St. Louis area. They put an awful lot of wheat in the ground. They put some of it in pretty early on some advisory service expectations, and it may be hurt pretty well, I suppose, although I haven't heard any estimates of how bad that crop might be. What are you hearing from the producers?
A lot of phone calls and a lot of insurance meetings that say that there's 70 to 100% or 50% damage or lots of damage. And it's probably one of the scariest situations that I've heard. And then, of course, you get people in northern Illinois that want to talk about, winter kill and major problems there as well. So I'd say the soft red winter wheat crop is going to be substantially smaller, and I do know that it's not usually wise to follow a grass after a grass, you know, in other words, no-till wheat, corn into wheat. It usually works better beans into wheat. There's some agronomy issues there, but people are going to probably do both, and there are some insurance advantages, particularly where you double crop beans, that you can get insurance on beans easier and fuller percentage-wise than corn. So my hunch is that probably Route 36 south, you'll see most of the acreage go to beans, and I don't know what the acreage north are going to do. I'd say it's going to be split.
You really think that? You don't think that? It seems to me that most of them, those producers, will have put nitrogen on, and they'll use Roundup, burn down, worry about the grass after the grass.
They tell me that it's a deal where it's kind of a detriment to stands and yield potential and stunning capacity. It's sort of like in the old days when you planted rye, it didn't let the corn grow quite well. Something you need to check out over in the agronomy department. And a lot of people in certain areas say it doesn't work quite as well. Now, the nitrogen issue, some of it says it's already in the plant. With no-tilling, you don't get advantage of the nitrogen, and that's a dead issue. But once again, check with the agronomy department. They'll have the right answer for you.
I suppose I better get on the horn with Emerson Nafziger.
Yeah, Emerson would have the right answer for you. It might take a couple of minutes for him to give you the right answer, but he'll give you the right answer.
All right.
And a good answer, too.
We could talk with Fred. We could talk with Emerson. We'll check with Fred Kolb as well to see what they have to say. I know I've talked with the weed specialist, and they didn't seem that it was going to be a problem, at least.
My interpretation is if I was standing in Effingham, Illinois, and had a problem, it would go to beans.
All right. Well, we'll finish that conversation a bit later. What did you see over at the Mercantile Exchange?
Over at the Mercantile Exchange, we continue to see this price gyration here with lower prices. The general feeling here is that the marketplace is, even with a strong stock market, we are seeing just flat price value, price erosion here, and a weakness at the Merc. I would imagine the cheaper corn and beans are also probably a negative factor to flat price cattle and hogs.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Have a nice day. Always nice talking to you.
Good to talk to you too, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the hour, Drew Lerner will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. He's with World Weather Incorporated. Ed Kieser is the chief meteorologist here at the radio stations. He says tonight across the two-state region in western Illinois, it'll be partly cloudy. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers, most numerous in Indiana. Lows this evening, says Ed, from 36 in some northern and central Illinois locations to 44 in the far southern part of Indiana. Tomorrow in southern Indiana, mostly cloudy. Scattered showers during the morning. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. Highs from around 50 near Lake Michigan to 65 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now with the news.
Agricultural news. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says he may be having second thoughts about USDA's Farm Bill proposal on adjusted gross income. USDA is recommending that farmers whose three-year average AGI is $200,000 or more be ineligible for direct and countercyclical payments and marketing loan benefits. Harkin originally opposed the idea, but now says he's warming up to the plan. Harkin says, and this is a quote, "A lot of payments made in Iowa go out of state to where the landowners are. That's not a good thing for my state." Meanwhile, House and Senate Ag leadership told members of the National Association of Ag Journalists yesterday that they hope to put 2007 Farm Bill language on paper no later than the end of May. House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says a draft bill could be finished by the first week of May. Peterson says the House is on schedule to get the Farm Bill marked up before the July recess and passed by September 30th. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns yesterday continued to push for Farm Bill provisions to help future farmers. At Iowa State University, Johanns said it's important that the Farm Bill offer incentives for cash-strapped beginners.
We're providing $250 million to increase direct payments for beginning farmers and ranchers. What would that mean? If you're a beginning farmer or rancher and qualify and you're raising one of our program crops, we're going to increase your direct payment by 20% for the first 5 years of your farming operation. We'll reserve a portion of our conservation assistance funds to support beginning farmers. We'll provide more loan flexibility for down payments and land purchases.
And Johanns says USDA wants to cut interest rates by 50% for the existing beginning farmer and rancher down payment loan program. A bipartisan group of U.S. senators have sent a letter to President Bush asking him to oppose any further concessions in World Trade Organization agriculture negotiations. The letter, signed by 58 senators, said, quote, "We cannot support a deal that directly reduces net farm income through steep cuts in farm programs in return for minimal market access gains." Over the weekend, U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab and trade representatives from the EU, Australia, Brazil, India, and Japan issued a statement saying by intensifying their effort, a WTO deal might be reached by the end of the year. A House Agriculture Subcommittee held a hearing Tuesday on livestock, dairy, and poultry, and there was little agreement on how the next farm bill will treat a wide range of issues, from country of origin labeling to packer ownership of livestock to mandatory arbitration. National Cattlemen's Beef Association President John Queen told lawmakers to keep restrictions off marketing options.
When it comes to market structure and competition issues, NCBA's position is simple. We ask that the government not tell us how we can or cannot market our cattle. The way we market cattle has changed significantly over the years, and it has come from a recognition within our industry that we are not just cattle producers, but beef producers.
The Senate is holding a similar hearing later this week. The National Biodiesel Board is opposing a partnership between ConocoPhillips and Tyson Foods to produce diesel fuel. Tyson plans on shipping animal fat to a ConocoPhillips oil refinery where it will be turned into diesel using the same processes as for crude oil. The process will qualify for a $1 per gallon incentive, and that has the NBB crying foul. National Biodiesel Board CEO Joe Joby.
We believe it is simply bad policy. It's bad energy policy, bad ag policy, bad environmental policy, maybe even more importantly, bad fiscal policy, because it will result in an enormous burden to U.S. taxpayers by taking U.S. taxpayer dollars and giving that over to the large integrated refiners for simply buying up vegetable oil and processing it in their existing refinery capacity.
Joby says a broad interpretation of the renewable diesel credit is unlikely to result in new refinery capacity, additional fuel supply, new jobs, or opportunities for agriculture. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can subscribe to our weekend newsletter. It's absolutely free and just wonderful. Dave Dickey does a lot of work on that newsletter, and I take it over the weekend, scrub it up and polish it up and make sure it looks right when it gets back to your email box. It's free. Subscribe at willag.org. Well, up next, you know, the Ag Economist at the University of Illinois had plowed through the numbers in USDA's March 30 Prospective Plantings Report. Their analysis suggests the shift in acreage, despite being very large and in some cases heavily tilted towards acres not well suited for growing corn, might only cause the trend yield to drop by half a bushel this fall. While the 2007 corn acreage will increase in the Corn Belt, a higher percentage of corn acres are projected to be grown outside that area, says University of Illinois Extension Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke.
Last year, the five Corn Belt states are the ones in the heart of the Corn Belt, which is Nebraska, Minnesota, Illinois, Iowa, and Indiana. They had a 57.2% share of all acres in the United States. If the planting intentions hold true, there will be a 55.2 share. So the share of acres of corn in the U.S. will decline in the Midwest by 2%.
The share of acres may decline, but that does not mean the number of acres in the Midwest has gone down, just the percentage of the total across the nation. And it increased by 15% over the last season nationally.
There's a lot of acres planted outside of those acres. And a lot of acres are projected to go into the Delta states, Missouri, which is sort of outside of the Corn Belt, and also North Dakota. North Dakota is projected to increase 910,000 acres. So we're seeing, well, while we're seeing the Midwest grow in corn production, other areas are growing as well.
That growth outside the primary corn-growing states has caused some to consider a large drop in the national average yield. Well, under normal growing conditions, Schnittke says that's just not going to happen.
We looked at that, and from a geographical standpoint, if the change in geographical distribution of acres likely will mean that the expected yield for U.S. corn production will go down about a half a bushel.
Down a half a bushel per acre nationwide, depending, of course, on the weather. U.S. farmers are expected to plant a record-setting 90.5 million acres of corn this spring. That's up about 12 million acres from last year. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
On this Wednesday afternoon, Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and in the cash basis levels. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
I just added new expertise to your area.
I noticed that. Thank you so much.
You know what? I could say with that, don't they trade? Do they trade poultry at the Mercantile Exchange? I have to look that up.
You do.
You go to. That's okay. Let's talk about basis levels in your area. How did things hold up through the gyration so far this week?
Well, the real values have popped up a little bit, not to a great deal, but they have improved and will continue to do so as farmers get in the field. But I think the Gulf basis kind of accelerated pretty good today, so it will eventually probably filter over to rail as well. So when the board goes down and the farmers get busy, why the basis levels do get better. The new crop values probably won't for a while, but we should see some improvement on the nearby as these guys get busy.
Now, why don't you tell me about the CIF values? Why is it that the Gulf changed today?
Now, that I don't know. I don't really follow the CIF market that much, but I do know we do get a couple wires a day just saying what they're doing. Why they went up so much, I'm not real sure. I really don't know.
And your feeling as producers head into the planting season, whether they'll stay with the ratios that they've been suggesting for the winter or not?
Well, there wasn't going to be a lot of switching here anyway, and there probably will be some wheat torn up, you know, what they'll do from there on. I don't know, probably plant beans, I would imagine, but you know, we're going to be way behind here. We're still extremely wet. And now there will be some planting here on some of the sand ground probably by this weekend, but they're talking 2 to 3 inches next week. So we've got a long way to go, Todd, but I don't think there will be a lot of changing if they possibly can get this corn in the ground.
You're about an hour south of us at latitude anyway. You suggested there will be some wheat ground torn up. What are they talking about in percentages, do you know?
No, I really don't know. It's a little bit too soon to tell. Some guys tell me that they didn't think their wheat was hurt at all. Others are saying that the crop adjusters are saying there's quite a bit of damage out there. And so, and I think it just varies. I really do. I think the damage varies from place to place.
Your bids for the day?
Corn, 342. Cash beans, 678. New crop wheat is 394.
We appreciate it much.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens on Wednesday afternoons in just about 2 minutes. We'll talk with ag meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather, your regional newscast. That one comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A nearby bank robbery led to lockdowns at three Decatur school buildings this morning. The school district says students were arriving at Johns Hill School when gunfire erupted from near a Soy Capital Bank branch nearby. The school was locked down as buses carrying additional students were ordered to wait in a nearby parking lot before they let kids out. Police gave Johns Hill the all-clear at mid-morning after two of the three robbery suspects were caught, but students stayed inside all day. No one was hurt, but counselors were on hand to talk to Johns Hill students. Eisenhower High School and Phoenix Academy 3 also went into temporary lockdown mode for a time. University of Illinois students will show their solidarity with Virginia Tech University students tonight with a candlelight vigil. The 9:45 event will take place on the Quad. Many campuses around the country have been staging vigils after Monday's mass shooting at Virginia Tech left 33 people dead. One of those victims, Austin Cloyd, was a former student at Champaign Centennial High School. Meanwhile, the interim police chief at the U of I says it shouldn't take long for a new emergency and notification system to be in place once it's purchased. The university's relied on email and a phone tree system to get the word out about urgent situations, but Crystal Fitzpatrick says the new setup will send simultaneous messages out to thousands of email boxes, cell phones, and PDAs. The mother of a parolee accused of setting a Quincy house fire that killed five children says her son had stopped taking medication for bipolar disorder before the fire. Zachary Meeks is charged with first-degree murder and arson in connection with the blaze early Sunday. Schaumburg-based Motorola says a number of charges and lower-than-expected sales of mobile devices caused it to report a loss of $181 million in the latest quarter. That compares to a profit of $686 million in the year-ago period. Governor Rod Blagojevich's patronage chief has resigned to take a job in the private sector. Blagojevich spokeswoman Abby Ottenhoff says Joseph Cheney's departure has nothing to do with a federal investigation into hiring practices and is part of a natural transition after an election. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Looks like we'll have clear skies, mostly some dry weather for a time, and then things start to close back down. Tell me what we can expect in the next 5 days and then after that, please.
Well, you know, it doesn't look all that terribly bad right now for the next 5 days, as you put it. We are expecting a few spits and spatterings across the region, but there's not going to be much meaning to any of the showers that occur between now and the first part of next week. There certainly will be a few localized areas that might pick up a quarter of an inch here or there, and it might slow down that drying trend and obviously interrupt some field progress. But as far as a general soaking that will set us back for more than a few hours at a time, we don't see that coming back in until we get into the middle part of next week. The western Corn Belt will see rain long before the eastern areas. In fact, we'll probably see some showers and thunderstorms occurring in the western belt as early as this weekend. A band of storms will probably come out of Kansas and work their way up into parts of Minnesota and the eastern Dakotas. That will probably produce anywhere from a few hundredths of an inch up to three-quarters of an inch, maybe something greater. But the eastern Midwest, when it comes to facing that particular storm system, will actually see only a restricted amount of showers because the system will fall apart as it crosses the Mississippi River. So the main event will be a storm center that forms behind this one, and that it will form in the plains probably Monday and Tuesday, and it will move to the east, crossing through the Mississippi Valley during Tuesday night into Wednesday, and then bringing us generalized precipitation the rest of the week in the eastern Corn Belt. That's when we will see our fieldwork come crawling to a halt, and we'll probably take a pretty significant setback in the field conditions. But the good news is that there's only one other system behind that one that would produce some additional moisture. We should go into a northwesterly flow pattern when we go into the early days of May, and that should restrict the amount of moisture that occurs, lower our relative humidity, give us greater sunshine and a better environment for drying and future field work as well.
Tell me about the, I guess it's the second system, not the third one, the middle one in there, just a bit more. Can we get a better handle on the track that it might take? You talked about maybe being wet in the eastern Corn Belt. Are we talking in the upper Midwest and the eastern Corn Belt? Are we talking which portions of the Corn Belt are likely to get the most rainfall?
Right now, it looks as though it'll be coming out of Kansas and parts of Oklahoma through Missouri into the heart of Illinois and over to Michigan and northwestern Ohio. It looks like the area that'll be most favored for the greater amounts of rain. But we're talking about a storm system that's a full week away, and a lot can change between now and then. So I really urge caution here not to get too wound up with the details on this storm system. It has the potential of producing a half to 1.5 inches of rain easily, and maybe even some amounts over 2 inches based on the data that we have today. But I think by the time we get closer to that event, the whole thing's going to change quite a bit. We'll probably see it become a more a limited storm system in as far as the number of days that will impact the region. We'll probably see the heaviest rains become more concentrated in a smaller portion of the region, but it's just too soon for us to get focused on that at this point.
What do you say we talk to you next Wednesday then, about the same time?
That sounds like a good idea.
We'll check in on it. Thanks much, Drew.
Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That is today's Closing Market Report. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the day's markets with Dave Dickey, and that you can listen to today's futures analysis, the cash grain reports, and weather right there on our website. Just go to WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.